I'm Gordon Walton, and I'm the tournament director. My contact information is here on this page. Norm Kerman is the director emeritus. His contact information is on this page. If you do have questions about rules, about interpretations of things, Norm and I are the ones who would be interacting with first to ask those questions. You can send them questions, but they do like to funnel it through the program partners in the region, and then they like to respond en masse through the updates. But occasionally they'll do it in a one-off email, and if that comes through us, then that can become the law of the land here in Western Pennsylvania, and we can communicate it to all the other teams. Our third primary volunteer is Terry Faber. He's the head judge. He's in charge of judge recruitment. Judge recruitment, really, the judging is only done in First LEGO League in Western Pennsylvania at our championship event, which will be held in December. So all of the other events leading up to that are 100% robot game. Terry often comes to those, but he's in charge of judging when it gets into that part of the season. So then we have about 130 volunteers over the course of the season. All right. Seems like you should be able to advance that. All right. So, what's going to happen this season? Well, we have three different types of events. We have educational scrimmages in the month of October. We have competitive scrimmages, three competitive scrimmages in November. And then we will have our grand championship the weekend of December 10th through the 12th. And that will be held, we found out today for sure that it will be held at Swickley Academy. I think Aaron. Whitaker is on. Thank you, Aaron, for making that happen. So if we go back and talk about each of those, the educational scrimmages, it has been quite difficult to find places to host the event this year that allow folks to come in from the outside and that are going to reliably be there. And so this year we are having all of our educational scrimmages in one place. And that one place is at the Brainstem Barn in Baden, Pennsylvania. It's 8 minutes off of Route 79, close near just north of the Wexford exit, between Wexford and Cranberry exit. So it is indeed a barn. It has naturally isolated areas called horse stalls for each of the teams. The teams are set up with their own practice field and a work area, and then they'll come out into a competition area when it comes time to run around in the educational scrimmage. So we will typically do three rounds, and this is set up to feel like a tournament, like a competition, but it isn't a competition. At least it's not a competition with other teams. We do keep score, but a team will come up. They will do, these all happen very early in the season. So again, to set expectations, nobody's ready. Nobody has a lot of missions. They are really coming to have a day of productivity. So they'll come up. The referees will talk to them a little bit, get them used to the idea of what happens when they come up to a competition table. And then they'll run whatever runs they're able to do. After that, the referees will talk to them about sort of what they tried to do, what worked, what didn't work. And then they'll also give a number of ideas of things that the team could work on over the next 40 minutes so that they could get even more points on their second attempt. They'll take the 40 minutes, they'll go and work on improving either the robot or the programming, come back for their second round, and the process will repeat itself. So they'll get more feedback, or they'll get to try it again. They'll get more feedback, new ideas of things to go off and do over the next 40 minutes. They'll go off and do that and come back for one final third round. So we do keep score, or we tell the teams the score. And so you can track how you're getting better over the course of the day. And we found that it can be a pretty motivational thing for a team, particularly early in the season, to see a lot of progress being made, how that gets made, and then to leave excited about plugging into it. So the educational scrimmages are good things to fit in whenever you can. They're great at the beginning of the season to motivate folks. They're great in the middle of the season as a way to sort of test and validate where you are. You also get to see other robots, see how they're holding up. To be optimally confusing, we have them all named with a whole lot of Bs. They have the Barn Blast Bazinga, the Bombastically Bold Buildup, the Brazenly Brilliant Bonanza, and the Big Brain Bonus Round. The Brainstem Robotics team, which is a team of high school kids that I teach, our mentor, is the formal host of the event. And in addition to the referees, they'll be milling around giving advice to kids as well. They're, I think, almost all FLL, former FLL students, and pretty good ones. So again, and the focus on the educational scrimmages will be just the robot game. We'll have three competitive scrimmages then. So this is also just focusing on the robot game, but it has awards. And so we'll give awards to the top five performing teams. And we have three dates for them, the 6th, the 13th, and the 20th. We know the locations for two of the three, and we're very close to, if I move this little square, we would probably know the location of the third, but I'm not authorized to remove that yet. So on November 6th, Aliquippa High School is hosting the Aliquippa Awesome Assembly. On the 13th, North Catholic in Seven Fields up near Cranberry is hosting the terrific Trojanator tournament. And then on the 20th, we'll also be hosting another event. Right now, these are all set up as AM tournaments. So they run roughly from 9 till about, well, probably 8:30 to 12:30. As we were saying before, if there are a bunch of teams that suddenly pop into existence, then we will probably be looking to add at least one more afternoon at one of these locations, so that we have, so that teams have the opportunity to potentially do two competitive scrimmages if they would like to. Teams are allowed to go to as many or as few events as they would like. The trick will be signing up for them. We'll talk about the sign-up process. It's staged, though, so that you pick your first choice educational scrimmage and your first choice competitive scrimmage. And then a week later, after everybody's had a chance to pick their first choices, then we open up the rest of the spots and you can fill out the dance card. All right, so that takes us to just before Thanksgiving. And then 2 weeks after Thanksgiving, we have our grand championship. The grand championship will focus on, it will include both the robot game and all three judged categories, the core values, the innovation project, and the robot design and programming. And again, that was a weekend of the 10th through the 12th. We will be finalizing which of those days or how it's spread across those days, excuse me, in the coming week, and we'll update you on the specific day of that. Typically, it's a Saturday. Like we, with the number of teams that we've got right now, it would be a Saturday event, and an exclusively a Saturday event. So you'd come in and you would do judging, and then do the robot game throughout the day in several rounds as well. If the number of teams goes over 40, then we have to start thinking about if we do judging the night before, come into that. All right, that's sort of an overview of the events. Jason, you asked, do most teams go to one of each scrimmage? I think that most, there are a few very experienced teams that will only go to competitive scrimmages that skip the educational scrimmages. And then they may go to, I think they typically aim to go to two, but then we do often have five or six of those tournaments instead. So they would like to, so the teams that are the most experienced tend not to, they tend to do the process that happens in the educational scrimmages pretty efficiently within their teams already. They want to do a competitive scrimmage so they're ready for the championship. They think of it that way. Other than that, I think most everybody else, both, you know, veteran teams and new teams, rookies and, you know, very, very experienced folks will tend to try to do both. They're fun events and the goal is to have fun. All right. COVID-related policies. So we do have some mitigation policies that are in place for all the events. And that because we are putting on events that work, that are intended to work with all of the schools that are involved, and that would allow people would be allowed to have the school kids come. We've got some constraints that we have in place to make sure that that is suitable. If you do have additional concerns, please let me know and email me, and we will see what we can do about it. But primarily, we are going to have masks required for all the participants within the venue. The participants, the coaches, and the spectators need to wear a mask. We just won't, students aren't going to be allowed to come by their schools or their parents unless that is the policy. And so that's the way it'll be. Our pit areas are going to be expanded. So the pit areas are more separated than we've typically done in the past. Typically teams are sharing pit tables that are sort of up against one another, and they will be separated out to use much more of the space. As we said at the Brainstem Barn events, the teams are isolated into, you know, areas that have walls built around them. In the big gymnasium events, like for example, at Aliquippa or North Catholic, they have large, very large gymnasiums, and the pit areas are separated out. The competition area is also expanded, so there's a greater distance between each of the pairs of competition tables. So you do need to have the tables abutting one another in order for the game to work. The helicopter mission, for example, gets done by dropping things on the opponent's table. And if both participants drop their things, then you you get extra points. But we will be trying to get greater isolation for the drive team. So the drive teams, as is typical, they're limited to two members, and they are competing at their corner of the table. The opposing drive team is at the other corner of the table. It's what, eight by eight, 16 square, yeah. Square, yeah. It's more than 8 feet apart from one another. And you can swap out drive team members though mid-match. So for example, if on mission one, when you leave the table or when the robot leaves the table, you have one set of drivers and then another pair of folks really worked on the second mission. So when it comes back, they can do that. And then we are going to be eliminating the queuing lines so that the teams are going to be invited up when it's their time to compete, rather than having a bunch of teams standing around in the queuing area. That is going to avoid unnecessary congregation, but it is also going to avoid necessary congregation. And I think that's going to make the events take longer. The educational events won't be affected at all. We can always do the teams in there within an hour's time limit. Unless the referees get a little bit too wordy, we're talking with the teams. And then and at the competitive scrimmages, I think we can manage that as well. It might add 30 minutes to the event. At the championship, we're going to really need to be having an active set of runners who can make that work, because that will be difficult. But perhaps by December, the rules will have changed. We'll see. All right, so how do you participate? Well, we need a season pass. So the teams get a season pass, and that lets them participate in all the events. To participate in the traditional championship event, I think just to be clear, while it rolls off the tongue that if you compete in any of the scrimmages, you are automatically registered for the traditional championship event. You can participate in the traditional championship event without participating in any of the earlier events. You'll just need to go out of your way to let me know that you're still wanting to do that. You get the full range of team experience and the time commitments. There are some postseason advancement opportunities. So this past season, while the World Festival was canceled, there was a tournament in Australia. We sent a couple teams to the tournament in Greece. There was one that they attempted to do in New Jersey that I think ended up not coming together. But we have interesting postseason opportunities for the teams that perform at the highest level at our championship event. That performance is measured by their Champions Award score, which we can talk about in a bit as well. This championship weekend is the weekend of December 10th through 12th. So this, and the season pass is $200 and it is available from PAFLL.com. So how do you participate in it? Well, just to make sure we're all on the same page, you do need to have a team that is registered with US First, which is the New Hampshire based organization that runs First. In order to get a team and to get the field setup kit, that is the Lego kit that fits on the field. When you do that, you do want to select Pennsylvania Southwest Pittsburgh as your primary region. I think they have largely taken away the options for where you can sign up now. But we are, as a region, we're Southwest Pittsburgh. That gets all of your email information to be accessible by me and gets everyone on the contact list. I'm imagining
I think it's
that
Southwest Pennsylvania, Gorda.
What did I say? Southwest Pittsburgh. Might be. All right. So, but it's definitely Pennsylvania. It's definitely Southwest. It's not Northwest, which is Erie. It's not Central, which is Johnstown. And it's not East or Northeast. All right. After you've got a team, then you go to PAFLL.com and you get the tournament series season pass. That gets you access to all the events in Western Pennsylvania. Starting September 15th, you'll be able to go to our website and take your first choice preferences. So at noon on September 15th, you can sign up for your first choice educational scrimmage and your first choice competitive scrimmage. If you are representing, so it does allow you, I believe, to say how many seats would you like to reserve. And if you, we do have a number of coaches who represent multiple teams. If you want to, grab them all at the same time, you can feel free to do that. You'll probably just need to send me a message that explains how you did that. It isn't very good. The system isn't very good about you letting you buy a whole bunch of things and then specify which team gets which, unfortunately. But don't feel like you need to go into the system, say, five different times. If you have five teams, you can go into it once and get all of those. But that being said, there's a maximum of one educational and one competitive scrimmage per team in this round. Spots get allocated on a first come, first serve basis, and you do need to have the season pass in order to book the event. If that is an issue, I know some folks have issues with needing to get invoices processed and things like that. If that is a challenge, again, just drop me an email. We can work through really any types of problems. A week later, then September 22nd at noon, the rest of the booking spots all open up and you can sign up for as many of those as you would like at that time. The afternoon, as we mentioned at the beginning, if the sessions fill up very, very quickly, if we have a lot more teams that are joining in the next week, then we are going to be looking at PM sessions after the AMs have sold out, and we will circle back to folks about what the opportunities are for that as that may come to fruition. All right. So the judging and the rules. There are four components to the challenge. So I think you guys probably have read through this. If you have more questions about it, we'll just go through it very, very quickly. And if you have more questions, please feel free to ask anything in the Q&A, or we can have a separate new teams meeting as well, if that makes sense. So the core values is the is one of the fundamental differentiators for FIRST, of how you bring gracious professionalism to competitive environments and to team interactions. And it's pretty nice. It is something that gets evaluated during the robot game and during the presentations on the project and the robot design. It's not a separate core values activity anymore. Robot design, then the judging here looks at the robot design, the programs that you built to make the most out of that design, and the strategy that you deploy in the game setting. So for example, if you have a forklift system that has multiple swappable attachments, so it's one basic mechanism, but a bunch of interrelated parts, that could be the strategy that you talk about how to accomplish a bunch of missions with basically the same robot. I think that's what we mean by strategy. The robot game, you're going to have three 2.5-minute matches at our championship event and at each of the other events to complete as many of the missions as possible. The teams will be hopefully experts by the time we get to the championship, having gone through a couple other events, having gotten really comfortable interacting with referees and having hopefully made all of the mistakes that everybody makes when they do this very, very early, when it doesn't affect anything at all. And then finally, there's the innovation project. So the innovation project is also a nice aspect of the FIRST LEGO League world. For that, your team identifies a problem to solve, you design a solution to it, you create a model or a prototype or an explanation of it, and then you share those ideas and collect feedback from people who are also struggling with that problem in the real world. So, and then you communicate your solution at an event. So the innovation project this year is looking at better ways, better transportation options for products. How can you improve the transportation of products? Identify a specific problem within this theme that you want to solve, create an important or improve a piece of equipment, a technology, or a method of transportation to solve your specific problem. The innovation project, in addition to being sort of a third or a quarter of the criterion for winning the overall champions award, the top ranked innovation project by itself advances to the global innovation award process, which is a separate postseason activity, which allows you to potentially obtain grants to develop prototypes and obtain patents for your inventions. That is the innovation project. We have the field. We looked at this a little bit. When it gets set up, it should be set up like this. I think, let's see, when we assembled these, there were several things that I put together wrong. What did I put together wrong, Norm?
The railroad tracks and the trucks.
Yeah, the railroad tracks. When you zoom in here, you'll see the places, the way that the field is set up. If you haven't assembled this yet, if you have, then you've already figured this out, I'm sure. But there are little squares with X's in them where you're supposed to put the dual lock. And then there should be a part that corresponds with that above it. If you took shortcuts, as tournament director I know did, building the train tracks, then these segments are all the wrong length. And that you can tell because where you put the dual lock doesn't line up with where it's supposed to be. So that I'm probably the only person that did that, but that I got to rebuild all of those a second time, you know.
He's lucky he got me to find them for him.
And then these trucks, front loop here, it has to be it's installed in a particular way, and so that it points down. If I think what happened is the blue A pillars were installed upside down, and that ended up changing the angle of our loop, and so they didn't nest very well. But they are supposed to nest pretty well. I think everything else seemed pretty straightforward. All the stuff Norm built was great, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So the game, there are 17 potential missions. Starts with mission zero. Mission zero is the do you fit in the little box? So drawing a line straight across here, does all the stuff that you take to the field fit in this area? If so, then you get the zero mission zero points, and then everything else requires you to leave base to get out there.
We have drawn a line on our boards right at that point, so you can see where that area ends.
Right here. Oh, right across here. Yeah. Yep. Great. So I won't. We won't go through all the missions. They do have the score sheet that is included in the document this year, which is very nice. There are almost always apps online that teams create that make it very easy to score the system as well. And it is a fun activity for the kids to learn how to do that and track. You know, it gets yet another kid involved in the practice runs, things like that. Let's see, is there anything new about this? I think there are several new things. There are a couple new things. One is the precision tokens. So I keep trying to remind myself to call them precision tokens and not touch penalties. The precision tokens sit in the corner of the field. You start with six of them and you get points for how many of them remain at the end of the match. So you will lose a precision token if the robot is touched before it comes completely back into base, or if a component of the robot, a part of the robot, doesn't make it back into base, but sits on the borderline of the base. In those scenarios, you have to bring them back in by hand, and you get you lose a precision token. New this year, if you end with six precision tokens, you get 50 points. If you end with five, you get 50 points. So they're actually making it so that there is no penalty for losing a precision token by touching your robot, which is pretty nice. Let's see. And then the other thing I'd point out here is on the score sheet, there is a gracious professionalism displayed at the robot game table. So new this year, then during each of the matches, the referees will be doing some of the evaluation of the core values of the team when they interact with them. There is then several updates to come out. Whoops, before we get to updates, the other thing I would point you to would be the rubrics. So the rubrics got simplified last year, but they will walk through for each of the judged areas, core values, the innovation project, and the robot design. What are the things that the judges are going to look for? And then what's the difference between sort of a beginning, a developing, accomplished, or an exceeds level of performance? And so this gives the judges the opportunity while they're going through, for example, on robot design, you can look at the mission strategy and evaluate the mission strategy. And if it really exceeds things, you can explain why it's better than just a clear mission strategy. These are all available on the FIRST website. If we go back here, see if I have, I do. In the resource library for the challenge updates and resources, this is where all of that information is. So we've got the challenge overview, which is nearly worthless. Every time I read that, I think it's going to give me an overview of the challenge instead of the sales pitch to be involved with it. The challenge updates, we'll talk about those briefly. The building instructions, the videos on the season and the robot game, the table building instructions. They have the building instructions for the actual Legos. And then down here, we have participation rules, the robot game rule book. That is what tells you all the very specific rules about how many points each thing is worth, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. And here are the rubrics. Every year, we'll have teams that will go into judging where no one has looked at the rubrics. And it just works a lot better if everybody knows what they're getting judged on. So I'd suggest we go there to download that. All right. So those are the rubrics. The last thing I would say would be the challenge guide of the updates. Oh, yeah, we're going to go and look at the updates, weren't we? So, all right. Nope. Hello. When I'm sharing my screen, it puts the challenge updates in exactly the wrong place. I really don't want to do that. We'll come here. We'll go to the challenge updates directly. So there were several updates within a few days of when it was released. They started to create updates. So it's nice to send one of your little 11-year-old attorneys off to read the rule books and know what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do, but also to make sure you're up to date on the latest changes. So the home delivery clarification, they added three pictures to show you the difference between the food package being on the doorstop partly versus completely. And so they'll have the different number of points. So 30 points if it's completely on. This is partly on, even if it's not touching the table or the mat. And this is partly on, even though it is touching the mat. Stranded cargo update. I'm sure we're going to get questions on this. This is a new change for them this year. Cargo is basically something besides your robot that you are controlling. And it could be, the two main categories are that if it's a robot part, or it's equipment, which is a robot part, or if it is a mission model, which would be it's something from the field setup kit. So if you strand cargo, that is say you are returning with one of the pieces of actual cargo that you collect, and it falls off the robot, if that's dropped or left outside of the home area, then we wait for it to come to rest. And if it's completely outside of home, it stays there unless the robot changes it. So you can't, you know, the kids can't just pick it up and bring it back into base, something like that. On the other hand, if it's partly in home, so teams that remove, or teams may remove cargo that rests partly in home by hand at any time, but it doesn't mean that they necessarily get to keep it. So if the object that was removed was a mission model, so I'm bringing back a piece of cargo, it falls out of the robot, or the robot stops before it gets totally in, and cargo is not totally in. Cargo is partly in, but not completely in, then it has to be given to the referee for the rest of the match. If the object's equipment, then it gets taken into home, but it gets treated like a touch penalty. You lose one precision token when that happens. All right. The airdrop clarification was just that the co-opetition mission, both teams accomplishing it, gives you 10 extra points. And you can read the rest of these here. These usually get updated every Thursday, and they won't be updated between Thursday and Saturday. So it won't be that you'll come to an event and find out that morning the rules changed. Anyway, that's the challenge guide. Those are the updates. And then I would just open it up for a general Q&A, I suppose. You can type in the chat or just unmute yourself and happy to talk about anything. Do you lose a precision token for leaving equipment on the field? You do not lose an equipment, a precision token for leaving equipment on the field unless it is partly in base and partly out of base. So that is the confusing part about what they just rolled out. So if it is partly at home,
if a piece of your robot falls off while it's outside of base, you can pick it up and bring it, and the robot comes back. You can pick it up and bring it back to where the robot is.
So what this will say is if it's partly at home, if the object was equipment, which is part of your robot or your attachments, and it is partly in home, then it must be taken into home, and the team will lose one precision token for doing all right.
Hey, Gordon, I have a
Yeah.
quick question.
Sure.
We're late getting registered this year. Teresa Rabliotti and myself are late
Yeah.
getting registered this year. Do you know how long the turnaround time is right now? Have you heard anything? Is it Are they running behind or for the kids?
For the kits. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that I have nine of them sitting in my basement that if you want to order them, then you can get them from me right away and then just return them when you get yours or something if you would like.
Great, thank you.
And they're already built.
I was gonna say,
Those nine are.
No,
I,
you can't have the built ones. They're
oh,
no,
bummer.
Yeah.
no,
Usually we build all
unless
20 at once. This year we just decided to build 10.
yeah, I've had a
Why don't
couple.
you just ask Norm to build one?
Yeah.
I did find out that they're only checking the mail on Mondays due to COVID. So if you send an invoice in a mail by check, they're only checking the mail on Mondays, and so there is a lag due to them picking up the mail and processing it.
Nice. So again, the offer, it is a first come, first served offer. We have, I think, eight that we can part with. We might have nine or 10, depending on how long we would be parting with them. They are unbuilt though. The ones that are built are all built for the Brainstem Barn events and need to be ready for those. So Jeff, you asked, do you lose a precision token for leaving equipment on the field? And then you clarified by saying you're thinking of using equipment to stabilize the cargo ship and leave it there. You are totally allowed to do that. You don't need to bring it back into base, and you don't lose a precision token for leaving junk on the field. They do say in the rules, which is hard for me to understand, but if it falls, if the cargo is left partly in base and partly not in base, then I'm sorry, the equipment, then you must bring it back in and you must get a precision token removed. I don't think you have the option of leaving the equipment partly in base. But all right. Oop, that goes to